I want you to picture a scene for a second. It feels like something out of maybe a high-stakes medical drama or even a chemistry lab. You are watching a medical professional preparing a life-saving drug. But instead of just unscrewing a plastic cap like you would on a soda bottle, they're holding this tiny, hermetically sealed glass container. And to get to the medicine inside, they actually have to physically snap the neck of the bottle. Just crack, right there.
It does sound pretty aggressive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Breaking glass to save a life. It feels completely counterintuitive.
It really does. I mean, it looks cool, but when you actually stop to think about it, it is wild. You are shattering a container to access medication. But as I found out looking through the research for this deep dive, that snap is really just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, absolutely. We tend to think of injections as just, poking it down.
Yeah.
A quick check mark on a list.
Yeah.
But today we are looking at the hidden world of parenteral medication administration.
Which is the fancy medical term for basically anything that doesn't go through the digestive tract.
Exactly. Injections of IVs putting strong chemicals directly into the bloodstream. And we've pulled together some heavy-hitting sources for this. We are looking at nursing skills protocols from COVID safety guidelines from the Institute for Safe Medication Practices or ISMP and health authority standards from Island Health.
And our mission today is to look past the checklist, because these documents are usually just dry lists of do this and don't do that. But we want to uncover the why. Why do you have to inject air into some bottles but not others? Why does the literal speed of your thumb on a plunger determine whether a patient gets better or goes into shock?
It effectively turns the hospital room into a physics lab. We're dealing with pressure gradients, fluid dynamics, and chemical compatibility, and the margins for error are razor thin.
So let's start with that glass-breaking moment I mentioned, the ampoule.
Ah, the ampoule. It is a classic piece of medical technology.
I've always been fascinated by these. Why use glass at all? Why not just put everything in a plastic bottle with a screw top? It seems so much safer.
It usually comes down to chemical stability. Some drugs react with plastic, or they need to be completely hermetically sealed from oxygen until the split second they are used. Glass is perfect for that. It is non-reactive and impermeable.
Okay, so you have this glass tube. It has a constricted neck with a little colored ring on it. That is the break point.
Right. And this brings us to the first big physics concept of the day, the open system.
Let's unpack that open system.
So before you snap it, it is sealed. But the moment you snap that neck, the medication is exposed to the room. It is effectively an open cup.
Which means the air pressure inside is the exact same as the air pressure outside.
Precisely. There is no vacuum fighting you. Gravity and surface tension keep the liquid in the bottom, but there is no pressure differential. So unlike other containers we will talk about, you don't need to force air in to get the liquid out. You just reach in with your needle and draw it up.
But this is where the glass part worries me. I mean, you just snapped a rigid material. Surely there is debris.
That is the massive risk with ampoules, microscopic glass shards. When you snap that neck, you almost always create tiny fragments. And this is where the COVID protocols get very strict. You never, ever use a standard needle to draw from an ampoule.
Because you'd just be sucking up glass with the medicine.
Exactly. You have to use a filter needle.
A filter needle. So there is an actual physical sieve inside the metal tip.
Yes. It is a tiny filtration device built into the hub of the needle. It lets the liquid pass through, but catches any glass particles. We are talking roughly 5 microns in size before they can enter the syringe.
And then presumably you have to take that needle off before you touch the patient.
You have to. That is a critical step. If you injected the patient with a filter needle, you would just be pushing those trapped glass shards right back out into their vein. So the workflow is filter needle to draw up, remove filter needle, attach safety needle, and then inject.
It's a very specific choreography just to avoid turning a cure into a hazard. Now compare that to the other common container we see, the vial.
The vial is what most people picture, a glass or plastic bottle with a rubber stopper on top.
And this is a closed system.
Correct. And this is where the physics gets a lot more demanding for the provider.
Because the vacuum.
Because of the vacuum. Think about a juice box. If you suck on the straw, the box collapses right.
Right. The sides cave in because the box is flexible.
Exactly. But a glass vial won't cave in. It is rigid. So if you stick a needle in and try to pull 5 milliliters of liquid out, you are creating a low-pressure vacuum inside the bottle.
It fights you.
It fights you hard. If you let go of the plunger, the vacuum will actually suck the liquid right back out of your syringe and into the bottle. It is a literal tug of war between your thumb and physics.
How do they win that war?
They equalize the pressure. Before you take anything out, you have to put something in. If you need to withdraw 2 milliliters of medication, you first draw 2 milliliters of air into your syringe, pierce the stopper, and inject that air into the vial.
You're replacing the volume of the liquid with the volume of gas.
Exactly. You are pressurizing the bottle just enough so that the liquid wants to come out. It makes the withdrawal smooth and accurate.
It seems so simple, but I imagine in a rush, it is easy to forget. You just see people yanking on the plunger.
And that leads to dosing errors. If you are fighting a vacuum, it is hard to get the measurement exactly to the line. Air bubbles form, it gets messy. And precision is the name of the game here.
Now, while reading through the Cobbett source, I saw something that looked like a hybrid, the two-chamber vial. This seemed like a really clever piece of engineering.
Oh, these are fascinating. You might see these called mixo-vials. This solves a distinct chemistry problem. Some drugs are very unstable once they are in liquid form. They degrade in hours or even minutes.
So you can't ship them as a liquid because by the time they get to the hospital, they would be useless.
No, you have to ship them as a powder. But asking a nurse to break open a powder ampoule, then open a water vial, then mix them, it is slow and prone to contamination.
So the two-chamber vial does it all in one package.
Yes. Picture a vial with two floors. The bottom floor has the dry powder medication. The top floor has the liquid diluent. Separating them is a rubber plunger or stopper.
And the user acts as the catalyst.
They push down on an actuator on the top. This physically dislodges the rubber stopper between the floors. The liquid falls into the powder, you give it a swirl, and suddenly you have fresh medication active and ready to use.
It's like a little chemistry set in a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of chemistry sets, let's talk about mixology.
Mixing medications.
Specifically, mixing two different beds in the same syringe. The source is focused heavily on insulin here. Why are we mixing insulin?
It is for the patient's comfort. A lot of patients with diabetes need two types of insulin. They need a basal or long-acting insulin to keep their levels steady all day, and a bolus or rapid-acting insulin to handle the spike from a meal.
And nobody wants to get poked twice before breakfast if they can get poked once.
Exactly. So they mix them. But you can't just mix things willy-nilly. The first rule is always compatibility.
If the charts say they don't play nice, you are doing two injections.
No exceptions. But with insulin, they usually are compatible. However, there is a very strict order to how you draw them up, and there's a mnemonic that every student learns. Clear before cloudy.
Clear before cloudy. Let's unpack the biology here.
Yeah.
Why is one clear and one cloudy?
The clear insulin is the rapid-acting stuff. It is a pure solution. It looks like water. Mm. The cloudy insulin is the long-acting one. It looks cloudy because it has a protein added to it, usually something called protamine.
What does the protein do?
It acts like an anchor. It binds to the insulin molecules and makes them heavier and larger, chemically speaking. So when you inject it into the body, it takes a long time for the tissues to break it down and absorb it. That is what makes it long-acting.
Okay, so we have the fast, clear stuff and the slow, cloudy stuff with the protein anchors. Why does the order matter?
Imagine you draw the cloudy one first. You dip your needle into that bottle. Your needle is now coated in that long-acting protein residue.
Okay.
Then you take that same needle and stick it into the clear vial to get your second dose.
You have just introduced the protein into the clear vial.
Exactly. You have contaminated the rapid-acting supply with the slowing agent. Over time, that clear vial will stop acting rapidly. You have ruined the pharmacokinetics of the entire bottle.
That is wild. You aren't just messing up that one dose. You're messing up every future dose coming out of that vial.
Which is dangerous for a patient who relies on that speed to counteract a sudden sugar spike.
Mm-hmm.
That is why you always draw the clear, rapid insulin first. If you accidentally get a tiny bit of rapid into the long-acting well, it just acts a tiny bit faster.
Mm.
It is not great, but it is not catastrophic like the other way around.
But the actual mechanics of this, I was trying to visualize it from the Cobbett description, and it sounds like a dance. Because remember, these are vials. They both have vacuums. You can't just pull.
It is absolutely a dance. It's often called the air dance. You have two closed systems, and you need to pressurize both before you take any liquid out of either.
So walk us through the steps. You have vial A, which is the cloudy long-acting, and vial B, which is the clear short-acting.
Step one, you suck up air for the cloudy dose. You poke the needle into the cloudy vial and inject the air. But, and this is critical, you do not let the needle touch the liquid.
Why not?
Because you don't want to draw any cloudy liquid yet. You just want to pressurize the headspace. Then you pull the needle out empty.
Okay, cloudy is pressurized.
Step two, you suck up air for the clear dose. You inject that into the clear vial. Now, since you are already in the clear vial,
you draw the dose.
You draw the clear dose that is clear first.
Got it.
Step three, now you go back to the cloudy vial. It is already pressurized from step one, remember. You just slide the needle in and draw your dose.
But now you have a syringe that is half full of the clear stuff.
And that makes this a high-stakes moment.
Yeah.
If you overshoot the mark and draw too much cloudy insulin, you can't push it back.
Because you'd be pushing a mix back into the bottle.
Exactly. The whole syringe is wasted.
Yeah.
To discard it and start over, it requires incredibly steady hands and focus.
It really changes your perspective on what is happening during that preparation time. It's not just filling a needle. It's managing pressure systems and chemical purity. But let's shift gears. We have prepped the syringe. Now we have to get it into the patient. And this brings us to the most dangerous part of the outline, for direct.
Often called 4B push.
This isn't hanging a bag and walking away. This is manual injection into the vein.
Right. And Kaba puts it very bluntly. 4V direct is dangerous because there is no time to correct errors.
That phrase really stuck with me. No time to correct errors.
Think about it. If you hand a patient a pill and you realize halfway through, oh, that's the wrong dose, you can stop them. If an IV bag starts dripping too fast, you can clamp the line.
But with a syringe?
Once your thumb pushes that plunger, the drug is in the bloodstream. It is traveling to the heart and brain in seconds. You can't uninject it. It's a one-way trip.
And if you push it too fast, you get this terrifying phenomenon called speed shock.
Speed shock. Sounds like a generic term, but it is a specific physiological crisis.
What is actually happening to the body?
You are overwhelming the heart and brain with a toxic concentration of the drug. Even a safe drug becomes a poison if it arrives all at once. The blood levels spike instantly.
What are the symptoms?
It hits fast. Flushed face, pounding, headache, tightness in the chest, irregular heart rhythm. It can lead to cardiac arrest and shock. It is the body saying, I cannot handle this volume of chemical this quickly.
So the prevention is obviously go slow, but slow is subjective. When you are busy, a minute feels like an eternity.
That is why the Island Health and Cobbett protocols don't just say slow. They use math to enforce safety.
Give us an example of how that works in practice.
Let's say you have to give 2 milliliters of a drug, and the monograph says administer over 1 minute.
Okay.
Try to push a plunger steadily for exactly 60 seconds. It is really hard. You will go too fast, then stop and go too fast. So providers break it down. They do the math. 2 milliliters in 60 seconds equals roughly 0.1 milliliters every 3 seconds.
0.1 milliliters every 3 seconds. That is a rhythm.
It is. Push count 1, 2, 3. Push count 1, 2, 3. It turns a subjective feeling into a measurable, safe mechanical action.
That makes total sense, but this is where I had my biggest aha moment reading these sources. You can do all that counting perfectly, and you can still give the patient speed shock if you mess up the next step, the flush.
The flush trap. This catches so many people out.
Explain this, because I think for a layperson, the flush just seems like cleaning the pipes.
So imagine you have just spent a minute carefully pushing that medication. You did your counting. The syringe is empty. Great job.
The drug is inside the patient, right?
Wrong. The drug is mostly inside the IV tubing.
A dead space.
The tubing connecting your syringe to the patient's vein can hold 1 or 2 milliliters of liquid. That tube is now full of the concentrated drug you just pushed.
So if I attach a saline syringe to flush it.
If you attach that saline and just whoosh it in because you think, oh, it's just salt water, it is harmless.
Mm-hmm.
You are using that saline as a battering ram. You are driving that column of medication into the patient at top speed.
You effectively undid all your careful work in the last second.
You instantly cause speed shock with the saline.
That is horrifying.
It is. And that is why the rule, and Island Health is very specific on this, is that the saline flush must be administered at the same rate as the medication.
You have to respect the dead space.
You have to treat the flush as if it is the medication, because functionally it is pushing the medication. It is fluid dynamics 101, but it is easily missed if you aren't paying attention.
That is a crucial insight. Now, sticking with the idea of managing what is in that line, let's talk about the sandwich technique.
The sandwich technique. This is less about speed and more about chemical warfare in the veins.
This is used when you have an IV running with one fluid, but you need to inject a drug that is incompatible with it.
Right. Let's say the patient has a maintenance drip of fluid A. You need to inject drug B. But if fluid A and drug B mix, they precipitate.
They turn into crystals.
Or a gummy solid. Either way, you do not want solid particles forming inside a vein. That causes embolism.
So you build a sandwich.
You build a barrier of saline. The saline is the bread. The drug is the meat.
Walk us through the steps.
Step one, stop the IV drip. Step two, flush the port with saline, which is your bread. This clears the line of fluid A.
The line is now neutral.
Step 3, inject the medication in the meat. Step 4, flush with saline again, your second piece of bread. This clears the medication out of the line and into the patient.
And only then do you restart the IV drip.
Exactly. The medication never touches the incompatible fluid. It was isolated by the saline buffer on both sides.
It is smart, but it also highlights how much hacking goes on. And this leads us to the warnings from the ISMP. They flag some MacGyver habits that have crept into the field that are actually quite dangerous.
Workarounds. When you are under pressure, you look for shortcuts. And one huge shortcut they identify is the misuse of pre-filled saline flush syringes.
These are those little plastic syringes that come pre-packaged, right? You see them in bins everywhere in hospitals.
Yes. They are convenient. They are designed to flush lines. But the ISMP has noticed that providers sometimes use them as mixing bowls. They will draw a concentrated drug into the saline flush syringe to dilute it.
I can see the logic. I need to dilute this morphine. Here is a syringe full of saline. I will just mix it in there. Why is that bad?
Two reasons. First, the syringe isn't designed for it. But the big one is labeling. That syringe has a label printed on the plastic that says normal saline. If you squirt 5 milligrams of morphine into it, the label still says normal saline.
And if you put it down on the tray for 10 seconds.
And your colleague picks it up to flush a line. They just unwittingly injected a full dose of morphine. Or because those syringes often don't have precise measurement marks, you mess up the dilution ratio.
It is the syringe swap error. It seems so preventable.
It is. ISMP is adamant. Do not use flush syringes to dilute meds. If you need to dilute, use a proper empty syringe and a vial of saline. Or even better, use ready-to-administer forms where the pharmacy prepares it for you.
So stop playing chemist at the bedside.
Exactly. The more you manipulate the drug mixing, diluting, transferring, the more chances there are for human error.
Before we wrap up, we have to mention the safety net, the final check. The source material references a mnemonic called KEETPRRR.
KEETPRRR. It sounds like a happy kitten, but it is a survival checklist for IVs.
Run through it quickly for us.
Before you push that plunger, C for compatibilities, A for allergies, T for tubing, is this the right line? S for site, does the vein look healthy? P for pump, is the safety check done? And then the three R's.
The R's are crucial.
Right, we talked about that, preventing speed shock, release clamps don't blow up the tubing, and the most important one, return and reassess.
You don't just walk away.
No, you pushed a potent drug. You have to stay and watch the patient. Remember speed shock. That happens in seconds or minutes. You need to be there to spot it.
It is a lot to take in. We have gone from snapping glass ampoules and filtering shards to the air dance of pressurizing insulin vials to the literal math of preventing speed shock.
And the discipline of the saline flush.
It really changes how you look at a syringe. It is not just a plastic tube. It is a pressure vessel, a volume calculator, and a delivery device that requires an immense amount of respect.
Absolutely. These procedures happen thousands of times a day in every hospital, but they are never simple.
It makes you realize that when someone is staring intently at their watch while pushing a plunger, they aren't just zoning out. They are doing calculus in real time to keep a heart rhythm stable.
And that leads to a final thought I want to leave you with. It is about a concept called the normalization of deviance.
Normalization of deviance. That sounds heavy.
It's a concept from safety science, and the ISMP warns about it constantly. It is when unsafe practices like diluting meds in a flush syringe or rushing an injection become the normal way of doing things because, well, nothing bad happened last time.
It worked yesterday, so it must be safe.
Exactly. It is convenient, it is fast, but it erodes the safety margins. You're walking closer and closer to the edge of the cliff without realizing it.
Until the one time the math doesn't work out.
Exactly. So if you are a patient or a provider or just someone watching the process, pay attention to the technique. Are they checking the label? Are they watching the clock? Because the difference between a therapeutic cure and a speed shock crisis isn't usually the medicine itself. It is often just a matter of seconds on a watch.
A really sobering thought for you to explore on your own. Next time you see a needle, remember the hidden physics behind it. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
Stay safe out there.